to what Nixon would have done. Stand with us as we secure Israel and the free world. In 1973, President Richard Nixon was charged not only with securing Israel and regional order, but also global order. President Nixon was a doer, a real politic. He was an active player in the geopolitical field. He was an initiator. On Yom Kippur, October 6, 1973, the state of Israel was attacked on multiple fronts by Egypt and Syria. They were backed by 9 Arab states, as well as 1 non-Arab state, the Soviet Union. Nixon acted decisively. He ordered his cabinet, "You get the stuff to Israel, now, now." Operation Eagle Grass replenished Israeli ammunition with the largest American airlift of foreign aid in history at a time. My friends, today we do not face the evils of communism. We face the evils of jihadism. As it did then, today, President Nixon would have been fast to react, would have sent an airlift to ram Israel, and would have secured a moderate Sunni coalition in the region to balance Iranians' aggression. That is because, since President Nixon, nearly every US president, Republican or Democrat, has understood what is at stake for America in this.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. You're probably scratching your head saying, why did she play that? I played that because that's a little bit of history that you probably don't know, and that is that Richard Nixon in 1973 did everything he could to help Israel in the 1973 war. He was devoted to helping Israel. And so, oh, for a president like that, you probably didn't know that about Richard Nixon. You probably only know what you've heard from, you know, history books who paint him as a villain, as a traitor to this country, more or less, as a failure. Well, that's not the Richard Nixon that those of us that lived through his presidency remember. And our guest today was a close friend of Richard Nixon. Now, that's not all we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about history for the last 50 years in politics. Some of the big names, the Kennedys, the Clintons, all those people, these are the people that my next guest knew. And he has great stories about them, so I hope that you'll stay tuned to listen. All right, you know, little things can make a real difference. A little note or a little smile, you know, like the little stone that David hurled at Goliath, and like precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small it is, makes a big difference. Who will this little baby become? And what will, who will this little baby become? And what giants will this little baby slay? And how about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow just because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mom to her child through ultrasound, which actually doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation, and preborn will take it from there. Their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with their moms. So go to preborn.com/Sandy, preborn.com/Sandy, and make your most generous donation. Of course, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7, and you know that you can listen to us on any podcast platform. Whatever you're accustomed to, you could certainly go to our mothership, which is AmericanFamilyRadio.net. That's AFR.net. You can find us on Facebook, Sandy Rios 24/7. You can email us at Sandy@AFR.net, and you can go to our website, SandyRios.com, to listen in a very convenient way and find out more about what we're doing. So for this show, this is kind of history. I love history. And this guy's been around a long time, plus he's written about a lot of the people that made the news in the last 50 years. So I hope you'll, you know, take a pencil and paper or grab a cup of coffee, sit back and relax, and enjoy today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
There are many people in the world who really don't understand, or say they don't, what is the great issue between the free world and the communist world. Let them come to Berlin. There are some who say that communism is the wave of the future. Let them come to Berlin. And there are even a few who say that it's true that communism is an evil system, but it permits us to make economic progress. Lass sie nach Berlin kommen. Let them come to Berlin.
All right, this is Sandy Rios with you. That's the voice of President John F. Kennedy. He was standing at the wall in Berlin in 1963. The wall certainly, it was freshly built. Only a few years prior to that, and thousands of Berliners who loved freedom in the West, who had families who were trapped behind that wall, friends that had been killed trying to escape, were there to echo the horrible effects of communism. Well, that's part of our history. And it's interesting, isn't it, as you hear him talking, the things he's saying about communism apply to what we're seeing today. All right, history is important. And knowing what's happened in the past and understanding that human nature never changes, the details may change, but the nature of human beings doesn't, makes our discussion today with someone who's been around writing about this stuff, knowing many of the key players on the historical stage for the last 50 years and writing about it. That's what makes this conversation so important today. I'd like to welcome R. Emmett Terrell. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of the American Spectator. He's just written a book called How Do We Get Out of Here? Half a Century of Laughter and Mayhem at the American Spectator, from Bobby Kennedy to Donald J. Trump. And with that, Bob Terrell, thank you for joining me.
Glad to be with you. And it's not just a book, it's a memoir. And I was involved in many of those instances that I talked about in the book.
Yes, well, let's talk about that. I mean, first of all, just let me ask you something preliminary. Bob, you started American Spectator, which was one of the early, from my knowledge, one of the earliest conservative magazines. There just weren't such things. I guess National Review might have beat you by a little bit, but American Spectator, you know, launched the careers of people like Thomas Sowell and P.J. O'Rourke, George Will, Bill Kristol, Bill McGurn. Lots of names that some people will remember. You've launched the careers or featured the writings. Pat Buchanan was one of them, of the early conservatives in the conservative movement. And why did you do that, Bob? What in your life set you on the course of conservatism?
My grandfather was a very conservative man back in the 30s. And I picked up the torch from him in the 60s, and I've kept it going.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's like Clarence Thomas and his grandfather. his story too. And when I was in Russia,
that's right. You know, it's interesting you point that out. That's absolutely true. The grandfather to Clarence Thomas was a great American, and we should all remember that our grandfathers are the great ones. We just follow suit.
Yeah, well, they did teach us a lot. And I remember when I was in Russia several years ago doing interviews, even with a KGB agent, Bob, a neurologist, all of these people kind of waking up from communism. The Soviet Union was still in place then. But every single one of them told me that their grandmother had whispered to them that there was a God. It's just amazing. Yeah. So I think the impact, even if it's a small interaction of grandparents, can be incredible. Okay, so yes, you did.
But I have a more amusing story about a more frivolous story about the president of the Soviet Union that I met, Boris Yeltsin. And people said that Boris Yeltsin had a drinking problem. I don't think he had a drinking problem. I just think he could never get enough of the stuff. And after I made that point, off we went.
You know, when I was there, everybody was drunk all the time. The engineer, we were doing a show out of Radio Moscow. Everybody was drunk. People in the park. It was just like it was the drug that dulled the horribleness of where they were living. But let's talk about. All right, so Bob, you founded American Spectator, and how in the world did your life intersect all the characters that you write about? You we're going to get into this because I want to know. You knew at least Robert Kennedy. You had an encounter with him. You knew Richard Nixon. How did your life intersect all these major players in history for the last 50 years?
Well, I went out and wrote to them and told them I wanted to get to know them better. And I didn't actually write Bob Kennedy. I was on the stage when Bob Kennedy gave a rousing speech at Indiana University, and he burst through the curtains and he said, "How do we get out of here?" That was the title for my book, 50 Years Later, How Do We Get Out of Here? And I let him out from behind the curtain. I let him down to the automobile that was waiting for him. He put his hand out in 1968 to shake my hand and to acknowledge my presence. And I put in his outstretched hand a Reagan for President button. He smiled and laughed. I smiled and laughed. And 5 weeks later, he was dead.
Wow. Well, that was quite the encounter that you'll never forget. Well, you know, since you've written about it.
I haven't forgotten it for 50 years.
No, of course not. Well, you write about a lot of people, so I'm going to let you take the lead here. Of all the people that you write about, which one, if you could choose one, who would you talk about that impacted your life or that you have some great stories about? Would it be Nixon?
Well, the fact is, I liked all of them. I liked Nixon. I liked both Ronald Reagan. I liked Donald Trump. I liked Donald Trump until he blew up. But he was a very gracious man when I met him, and a very funny man, and a great source of strength for the American people for the first 3 years. The last year and more recent times have been more dubious, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, let's go back in time and talk about some of the people that people might not know much about. You know, Christian Healthcare Ministries gives you freedom over the choices that you make when it comes to your healthcare. And I mean lots of choices. You can choose not only your doctor and your hospital, but you can actually have the right to choose what treatment you want. You don't have an insurance company telling you you can't do this or you can't do that. Plus, you don't have all the complications of dealing with insurance. You're like a private person paying your own way with your bills. You pay for your bills, or you sign that you're going to be responsible for your bills without insurance. And what you can do often, one of the benefits of that, like especially in surgeries and things like that, you can get a discount on the procedure because you're a private payer. But when you finish your medical process and the bills start to come, you send them to Christian Healthcare Ministries. That's the way it works. And then depending on what level you've signed up for, they will pay your bills for you. It's a wonderful way, and I think really and truly, given where we are and where we're moving in terms of healthcare and the trust that we lack in our health insurance and in our medical communities, it's a really good time for you to check out chministries.org/Sandy. That's chministries.org/Sandy. Let's talk about Richard Nixon. I was in Berlin, Germany in 1973, I believe it was 73, when he resigned, when he was forced out of office. And of course, to me, that was the first time I ever saw the media, the journalistic community, destroy a president. That was my first glimpse at that. Well, you were in the journalism community then. I was just the wife of an army guy. What happened there? You can't talk about Watergate, but how? You knew him. How did they distort his character, or were they right the way they characterized him?
No, and it's all in the book. I've written everything in the book about Richard Nixon that I can think of writing. It's very relevant, and I've revealed that he was not guilty of Watergate. You'll have to read the book, but he wasn't guilty of it. And on the other hand, on a more frivolous side, he made the best martini of any president I ever met, and I've met six of them.
You know what? I would like to just play a clip for you. This is just a random clip I picked. This is President Nixon, and he is addressing, you know what, I can't remember the person he just defeated in this race. You'll remember. But he's addressing the loser in the presidential race. Yes, thank you.
There
you go. Yeah. And I want to play just this. Let's listen. This is just a short clip of Nixon addressing Hubert Humphrey's supporters just after he'd been elected. Let's listen. This is clip four.
I'd like to express to him and also to the thousands that work for him, because he, like myself, had a great core of volunteer workers, many young people as well as others, a bit of philosophy that has guided me through the years of defeat toward this victory, and it is this. A great philosophy is never won without defeat. It is always won without fear. What is important is that a man or a woman engage in the battle, be in the arena, participate. And I hope that all of those that supported Mr. Humphrey and will continue their interest in politics. They will perhaps be in the other party. We may be contesting again. Who knows? But the important thing is that our process in this country works better when we have devoted, dedicated people giving their all in battle for a cause that they believe in.
Okay, so Bob, who's the real Nixon? That guy sounded pretty engaging, pretty deep and thoughtful, but the Nixon that the history books tell about, and that most of our kids and even their parents know about, is a very unpleasant, lying, deceptive person. So which is the real Nixon?
Well, Richard Nixon, the real Nixon is that Nixon that on that speech that you just broadcast. I didn't know him when he was president, but I knew him when he was out of office. In fact, I introduced him to the world of intellectuals after he re-entered politics or re-entered public life. And he was much more like the man you just played in that broadcast than the squirrely person. And I never saw a squirrely side of him, ever. And I was with him practically till the day he died.
Well, see, that's what we need, is setting the record straight. I have a different, you know, my view of him was just what I heard from the media and when I heard him speak. And I really liked him. I really did.
Remember the martini that I talked about? He was a very engaging guy, and He would be, very pleasant. He would have us out to Saddle River, New Jersey, where he had a house, and we'd sit around and talk about public affairs, and in the course of which he made a martini for me. No one ever thinks of Richard Nixon being a fun-loving guy like that, but he was a very amusing man also.
You know, I have a friend who is a world-famous photographer. Actually, he just died 1 year ago, exactly 1 year ago, but he was nominated for several Pulitzers. He was with the Chicago Tribune. He did the world-famous aerial view of the Jonestown Massacre. But he also was assigned to take a photo of Richard Nixon on Air Force One. And the story that he told was that he wanted Mr. Nixon to take off his jacket because he wanted something a little more less formal. And President Nixon would not take his jacket off. That doesn't mean anything other than just a little anecdote that I thought was interesting. Was he a very formal person like that, or was just his, you think that was part of his presidency and he felt that that would make it too casual?
Well, he was a formal person, but, you know, Ronald Reagan was a formal person too. And I was in the Oval Office with him time and time again, and he always had his jacket on. He was, of course, the greatest president of the post-war period. I was with him, and I would try to help him, engage him with the one thing that he never achieved. He tried to change our culture. Historians that have studied his work have thought that he failed at this, and I think he failed at it. With tax cuts, with the ending of the Cold War, he made up for that.
Well, also his passion against communism. When I hear, you know, his quotes even today, they have tremendous impact. I think, look, I'm not the historian you are, that's for sure. And I don't have the gravitas to argue with others who say differently. From my perspective as an informed citizen, I think he made a big difference. He gave us hope. He gave us, he taught us to love our country again. He did change the culture.
Well, no. He did not change the world of Madonna and the Beatles and all of
okay.
that stuff. And that stuff precedes politics. And unfortunately, he couldn't change. And he couldn't change that culture as I was very much a part of this activity. He couldn't change it because he had moles within his own White House. Deaver, Baker, these people undermined him time and again, and he couldn't fight them all. I mean, the greatest conservative in the White House in those days was Ronald Reagan. He was almost the only one.
Doesn't that sound familiar? I mean, that's exactly what happened with President Trump, you know, as you well know. So many people stabbing him in the back, and I did not realize that was happening with Reagan, but I do remember that he was as hated by the press as George Bush later. And then, of course, they're always Republicans, the ones that are hated by the press. And then Donald Trump, just hated, brutalized. You know, let me ask you, Bob, had you ever, from your historical vantage point, had you ever seen the press do to any president what they did to Richard Nixon?
Yes, Donald Trump. They were worse. No. They treated Donald Trump worse than he treated President Nixon. Donald Trump got it left and right from the day he stepped in the White House.
Yeah, that's for sure. But I mean, before President Nixon, had you seen anything like that before that time?
No, you didn't. No.
Well. Interesting. Well, I guess we could go back to Abraham Lincoln. He certainly took his licks, too, in the press. But, all right, let's go back to, now this is something that you and I both, you wrote about it, but I had a front row seat to this in a different way. I was on radio in Chicago doing drive time when this happened. I'm just going to play a clip for you, and now you'll know what I'm talking about. This is clip 8.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Ms. Lewinsky.
Following that blunt denial by President Clinton yesterday, his wife, First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton, candidly answered questions with NBC's Matt Lauer on the Today Show this morning. She wasted no time in slamming Special Prosecutor Kenneth Starr, accusing him of being behind the allegations that have rocked the presidency.
We get a politically motivated prosecutor who is allied with the right-wing opponents of my husband, who has literally spent 4 years looking at every telephone.
$30 million.
More than that now, but looking at every telephone call we've made, every check we've ever written, scratching for dirt, intimidating witnesses, doing everything possible to try to make some accusation against my husband.
Nearly 6 years ago, Clinton admitted that he had caused pain in their marriage, referring to the affair he had with Jennifer Flowers.
If he were to be asked today, Mrs. Clinton, do you think he would admit that he again has caused pain in this marriage?
No. Absolutely not. And he shouldn't.
Okay, so those are the voices of Bill and Hillary Clinton. Lots to say about them. But Bob, when did you and the American Spectator start covering them? Was it after his presidency or before?
It was before his presidency, but we were the people that broke his presidency. Tom Wolf said in our our gala dinner in 2005, that without the American Spectator, Hillary would be president. And I think that's true. They turned up the heat in the kitchen for on us, but we cooked their goose. And I'm very proud to say that we cooked their goose.
Well, I am very happy that you cooked their goose. Let's go back, though. I noticed something. Now, this—I don't know. This is in your book. I don't know, Bob, because I. But the Arkansas Project. Did you guys produce that or have? And we'll talk about what that is, if that's all right with you. Were you guys in? You
were
involved with that,
it's
right?
All right with me.
Okay.
Yeah. We created the Arkansas Project, and the Arkansas Project was the way we could pay people to reveal the truth about Bill Clinton. And now it's pretty much been validated that, as I say, we cooked their goose. And we were the only people out there, week after week, revealing stories about Bill Clinton. But
I
was glad to do it.
Let me just say, I was echoing all the things you were finding, because I'm guessing that in the Arkansas Project, you wrote about the drugs that were coming into Arkansas. Was it MENA Airport, something like that? Is that part of what you reported on?
That was my story, yes. I reported on it.
Okay, well, I told your story in Chicago, so people did hear. And also, I interviewed three of the troopers that came out to speak about Bill Clinton's behavior. Now, wasn't this before the first election? To my mind, it was, Bob.
No.
Is that right?
No. It was after he'd been elected.
That the troopers came out. Okay.
Yes.
Well, there were lots of people from Arkansas trying to stop his, even before his first election. I remember getting calls from people telling me, you have no idea why in the world you don't want him to be president of the United States. And yet, what else can you say about what you remember about those days, Bob?
Well, all I can say is I got to get to spend the rest of the afternoon with you. So I'd rather not talk all about everything. I'd rather not be asked to dredge up everything about Bill Clinton. But Bill Clinton was, and Bill Clinton's wife, his lovely wife, Bruno, she was just as bad as he was. And now, of course, they're out of office, and they're no longer the menace to the Republic that they were.
Do you think they really are? Do you think they've been reduced to that? With the Clinton Foundation kind of, you know, having been diminished, do you feel that they don't have that much influence anymore on what's happening?
No, they don't. And it's a good thing that they don't have it. No, their days are over.
Well, let's go backwards.
And
because
their days are over because of the American Spectator at the outset. We were there. We were the first to go after Bill Clinton, and we were the last word in Bill Clinton's disgusting presidency.
Yeah. Let's go backwards, because we really didn't talk about John F. Kennedy. I played that clip about him, a clip from him at the Berlin Wall. You know, when I was a kid, I was very conservative as a kid. My folks were conservative. My dad was a World War II veteran. But when Kennedy got elected, Bob, I used to just love his press conferences. He fascinated me. He was so clever. Now, you followed, I don't know if you were yourself old enough to cover him in a professional way when he became president. Were you? Or
no.
What can you tell us about that era?
Well, I can tell you he was a very gifted politician. And, of course, his presidency was cut short by an assassin's bullet. As his brother's candidacy was cut short in 1968. And the president, Bob Kennedy Jr., is running for president, and he can't get the White House to extend Secret Service protection to him. That's a shocking, shocking revelation about, I don't quite know what Joe Biden's hiding, but he's certainly, if anything happens to Bob Kennedy Jr., it'll be blood on Joe Biden's hands.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. It's Robert Kennedy Jr. Yes, I can't believe it that he can't get Secret Service protection. And I'm glad you mentioned that. Well, the book is called How Do We Get Out of Here? A Half Century of Laughter and Mayhem at the American Spectator, from Bobby Kennedy to Donald J. Trump. Is there anything else you would like to share with us before we say goodbye to you this morning?
No, I just tell you, I had a lot of fun writing this book. And I think I have a lot of fun reading it. And I encourage people to read it, because it's the truth of the last 55 years of American politics. I have a lot of the truth packed into the book.
Well, I love history, so I'm going to enjoy reading it for sure. Oh, it's wonderful to have some time with you, Bob Terrell. It's been a real pleasure. And again, the book is called How Do We Get Out of Here? A Half Century of Laughter and Mayhem at the American Spectator, from Bobby Kennedy to Donald S. Trump. Bob, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, some of you have more resources than others. You know, you've just been more blessed financially. And sometimes you're really good at giving, and that's the reason God blesses you financially. And so if that's the case with you, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way than just providing $28 for an ultrasound? You know, your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours and will rescue an average of 200 babies. Well, to donate, all you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy, and check out the possibilities. If you'd like to give more, you could also provide an ultrasound machine if you have even more to give than $5,000. There's all kinds of ways to help Preborn Ministries, and I hope that you'll explore that. Go to preborn.com/Sandy.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was the voice, again, of John F. Kennedy when he was president. He is famous for so many great lines. I think about, he was so enthused about us going into space. You know, he started the whole thing about us, building the space program and sending someone to the moon. He was a real visionary, in spite of his moral turpitude. But, you know, even at the time, like, we didn't know anything about that part of his life. And if John F. Kennedy were a politician now, he would be a conservative. That's the irony. Pro-life, pro-military, you know, pro-low, you know, not much debt. I mean, it's just kind of amazing how far we've declined. I've asked Bruce to join me because, again, he and I both love history. That was interesting, Bruce, that conversation with Bob. He's a lot of times, you know, he didn't embellish the way I'd hoped he would. But it's important, don't you think, to listen to someone like that?
These are the people that we are losing touch with, people that have witnessed history, not just read about it or heard about it. They have actually witnessed it. And it's important that we get the entire story. As Paul Harvey used to say, what I envision this book to be is the rest of the story.
And now the rest of the story. Yeah,
because we've watched over the years, whether it be President Nixon, Reagan, Bush, Trump, their reputations be destroyed by the media, or at least attempted to be. And we've watched John Kennedy, Bill Clinton, and now Joe Biden, their reputations be bolstered by the media. And someone like Bob here is providing the counter to what the mainstream media has said. And isn't it interesting to watch the common denominator? The people that are destroyed by the media are all Republicans. The people that are bolstered by the media are all Democrats.
You know, and I guess I would just say to people, look, for those of you that are older and even younger, I think we're beginning to understand because of, we know our media is twisted now. We know that it's filtered, that Google is not letting us search. And these are public things that we know. People are being censored on Facebook, shadow banned, fill in the blanks. And so we can understand more clearly how a person's real reputation or the truth about them could be hidden. Because at the time that these people were operating in the public sphere, there were only three networks. Three. That's it. New York Times and the Washington Post and there were some LA Times, I'm guessing, were the major papers, but they all sang off the same playbook. In fact, I remember interviewing Bernard Goldberg. He used to be a very, very famous commentator who actually kind of became I don't know if he'd say he became a Christian, but he became a conservative. And I had him in the studio with me. And I asked him, because I never understood this, why is it that when we turn on ABC, CBS, or NBC every night for the nightly news, and you and I talked about this recently, Bruce, whether it was Walter Cronkite or the other two, Smith was one of them, Howard K. Smith.
Howard K. Smith, yeah. And then
the two guys. Anyway.
Huntley and Brinkley.
Yeah, Huntley and Brinkley. Why did they always lead with the same story? I mean, there's a lot of news in the world, so why do they always talk about the first story? It's always the same on all three networks. And it just was a mystery to me. I could not understand that. It's a big world. And he said, it's easy. It's the New York Times. It's what all the media watches, reads. They get their headlines from what the New York Times emphasizes. So they had tremendous control. And, of course, then they had tremendous control about what we knew about all these people. That Bob has written about. One thing that struck me when I played that Kennedy clip at the Berlin Wall, Bruce, was, of course, I lived in Berlin, Germany, and you and I have been watching a series on East Germany and the Berlin Wall. We've watched a couple of series, and it just, what he said about the loss of freedom is so important for people to remember.
It certainly is. John Kennedy is the first president I really remember. And as you said, he had so many great words. I remember we had a calendar in our school, and on there were the words from his inauguration: "Ask not what you can do for your country, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." I remember being like 7 years old and reading that over and over. And you know, President Kennedy had so much persona. I mean, he acted like a
charisma,
leader.
Charisma.
He had charisma.
Yeah. But talk about what he just said, honey.
But what he said is, you know, he wasn't,
for his foibles, he was not a shallow man, and he was not just looking to be popular. He had been in war. He recognized the dangers of the Communist Party, of what was going on in Europe, the oppression of people. And really, it took a lot of guts to stand in the breach, because here you are living in West Berlin. West Berlin is completely surrounded by East Germany, which is controlled by the communists, Russians, and the East Germans. And daily, they were facing the fear of, could we be overrun today? Because let's face it, that would have been easy to do if you didn't have someone standing behind you with some backbone. And we're seeing it today, the problems of when a president doesn't have a backbone and they make threats that are empty. Whereas President Kennedy, when he spoke, the Russians, Khrushchev knew, you know, I don't want to mess with this guy. He means it when he says, we will retaliate. We will defend ourselves, and not just our country, but any of our allies.
Yeah. Yes, and he made good on his promises. And so, but one thing, point I want to make, when he said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country, we have so flipped that on its head, Bruce.
Yes.
It's all about, you know, it's my Social Security. I vote, you know, it's what they, I get free stuff. So we vote for the people that give us free stuff, like what they can do for us. Or it's for my people that like my race. I'm black or I'm white. And so whatever the government does for my race, then that's the people that get my vote. It's what the country can do for you. It's twisted. It's exactly the opposite of what he tried to implant in our understanding.
And I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna, but I'm telling you, those kind of words really did inspire you as a person. I remember listening to him and thinking, yeah, I do want to do something for my country. I want to be involved. I remember the Peace Corps was a big thing, serving in the military. It was, what can I give? Because that was the founders' original intent. We've read over and over how they said, without participation of people, this republic that they've established will not endure.
So I want to play one last clip, and this will be brief as we wrap up. But this is something Bob alluded to. But here's a voice that will maybe didn't inspire us. Let's listen to clip 7.
The great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
All right, that was a young Hillary Clinton, relatively young. And I just want to say, the American Spectator did, as Bob said, and I wish we could have talked more about it with him, because I covered the Clintons until I wore myself out through the 2016 election. I've been fighting the Clintons myself, because the story of their lives and their involvement in politics and their seedy, horrible past, honestly, it is. Many of us tried so hard to inform people, and that will be lost now, because they're like heroes still, right? Bill and Hillary Clinton are still stars of the Democratic Party, and people don't know, unless they read this book of Bob's, they'll never know how bad the Clintons were.
The Clintons have been involved in criminal activity for 40 years. I remember being a young FBI agent and talking to an agent that I respect, one of the most respected people I ever met in the FBI, who had been assigned in Arkansas. And this was prior to Bill really hitting the radar screen running for president. We had just heard his name. And this agent detailed to me all these things that had gone on in Arkansas under the Clintons. And look, he had no reason to tell those stories if they weren't true. Bill Clinton was not a player at that time. And he told me about the state troopers ushering Clinton around to the various women, to the drug flights coming in, to the people that they had been in business with that all of a sudden ended up dead, to Whitewater, all of those things.
Yeah. And fast forward, and then the Clinton Foundation, which in Haiti virtually raped the country of Haiti and the people there. The money never got to them. I remember interviewing the Secretary of State of Haiti, and he cried as he told us how bad it had been in Haiti because of the Clintons.
You know what to me is always scary about the Clintons, and you heard it in two clips there. One was of Bill denying anything to do with Monica Lewinsky, and Hillary with her vast right-wing conspiracy statement. You look at their faces. They are psychopathic or psychopath in their lying. They can look right at the screen and they can convince you.
Yeah.
I've had friends that have been in their presence that are like, you know, we don't like them, but when they talk, you believe them. They just have, there's something about them that's convincing, and that's scary.
Yeah. Well, Bob details all of that in this book. How do we get out of here? A half century of laughter and mayhem at the American Spectator, from Bobby Kennedy to Donald Trump. So I hope that you'll, I think you'll enjoy the book. I'm going to enjoy the book. And I thank you, honey. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
We have a lot of historical memories, don't we?
We certainly do.
And they just get to be more and
we
more.
We must be old.
Now, don't say that.
Oh, just me.
All right, just you. All right, well, listen, thank you for listening today. And I want to remind you as we close out that you can call us at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can go to our website, sandyrios.com, and find out information about the show and hear the show, actually. If you want, you can go to our home ship. It's afr.net or any podcast platform that you are familiar with. We do appreciate you listening. And as we say goodbye, don't forget, Christian Healthcare Ministries gives you great opportunities to choose your own, make your own decisions about your health care. Check them out at chministries.org/Sandy. And then Preborn helps save lives of unborn babies with your help. So many of you have helped them. And if you haven't had a chance to give lately, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.